This is Hard Foul of Hard Foul Podcast, and you are listening to the IDP guys.
You're listening to the IDP guys with Sean, John, and Nathan, the Wizards of Fantasy Football. Your go-to source for the individual defensive player strategy. And now, three guys who could only make an NFL team on Madden.
Hi, and welcome to the IDP guys. I'm Nathan. I'm joined today, as always, with my buddy John and our good friend Sean. How are you guys doing?
Nate?
I see a buddy and I'm just a friend.
I like John more.
I'm not your buddy, guy.
I'm not your guy, pal. We're on episode 26. We are a podcast about fantasy football, as well specifically about the IDP strategy and individual defensive players.
This will be a dry podcast for Nate.
Yeah. No booze today. We're recording early in the day. Just got out of class, off of a week-long vacation, which was nice, but I didn't get a lot of football. I did get to see some of the games that
saw the Vikings play.
Yeah,
right?
The Vikings game last week was against New Orleans. That was ridiculous. That ending, holy shit!
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
So today we're going to break down the divisional game since we didn't do it last week because I was out of state, and then the conference games that happened over this past weekend, and then we finally have our Super Bowl lineup, and then we'll get a little Johnny the Greek, and that'll be it. So how about we...
How do you have hiccups already? You're not even drinking.
I can't talk. As I say often, I'm a print journalist. I'm not very good at broadcast, so...
He's got a voice for print.
And a face for radio. So,
just stay behind the keyboard.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Sean, just real quick, tell me, dude, what was it like in Minnesota after that shit happened with Diggs a couple weeks ago?
Honestly, I wasn't at a bar. I was at my buddy's place, and I was there with a Packer fan and one Viking fan.
Oh, my God.
So I didn't get the full experience, which I'm kind of glad of, because just the rest of the week at work, hearing about that every single day was just insufferable. I was actually rooting for the Vikings until their reaction to that. And then I was like, no, go Eagles. Fuck this shit.
Yeah, dude, that was some of the wildest shit. You know what I thought of after that was the Music City Miracle. That's what it kind of felt like, with the way that ended. Yeah,
it was crazy, and it was dumb luck.
Yep. Absolutely crazy. Well, the thing that I can't get a straight answer on is if Diggs could have gotten out of bounds with any time left.
He could have gotten out of bounds if he wanted to, but he had the clear shot at the end zone. He wasn't going to do that.
Yeah, right, mm-hmm. Right. You can't trust who's their fucking kicker? I don't even know.
Forbath.
Right, Forbath. Yeah, and they have bad luck with kicking to win playoff games. So...
That's one of my favorite gifts to send, is just search wide left and pull up all the Blair Walsh gifts.
Yeah.
The Blair Walsh one. Yeah.
The laces out. I used that during the college championship game when what's his face shanked that
the one that they went into overtime because he missed. Kicker. Yeah.
And thought that, but that would have been it for him. But
that's happened to the Vikings a couple times though. Wasn't it Morton Anderson back in the day against the Falcons?
Yeah, perfect season until that kick.
Yes, right. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites though. Anytime a Vikings fan is talking shit, just say wide left. that's it. That'll end it.
Definitely.
Cool. So let's kick it off into the divisional games. I've got the first one up was Falcons 10 at Eagles 15. John, you want to give us a recap on that game?
Yeah, sure. So before going into this game, all of us were pretty much agreed that the Falcons should have won this. They were trending up. Eagles were trending down. But they got it done. They got the home field, and it was a grinded out defensive struggle. Not a lot of offense going on, but they did pull it out with a defensive stop in the last minute. Defensively for the Falcons, it was Robert Alford with 7 solo tackles, 1 assist for 8 total. For the Eagles, it was Malcolm Jenkins with 6 solo, 2 assists, 1 tackle for loss. Not a very flashy game, but they did what they had to do. And with last week too, it seems like their home field and the kind of the underdog mentality has just been powering them right through. Sean, did you caught that game, right?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say I love the dog masks.
Yeah.
I think those are fucking hilarious. I caught that game. That one surprised me. It really shouldn't have surprised us.
Right.
That I didn't believe in Foles, and I thought that I tend to bet on the better quarterback in the playoffs, but that obviously was not the case this year with Bortles, Keenum, and Foles in the last 4 standing. But I think the Falcons are in trouble without Kyle Shanahan. Their offense doesn't seem to look as good. Obviously, the Eagles have a really good front 7. They're just a good defense overall. They're going to be even better next year when Sidney Jones gets a year under his belt. I don't know what to think about the Falcons. They really don't look explosive on offense without that Kyle Shanahan scheme. And to be fair, it should still be the same scheme, the Kyle Shanahan scheme, just different play calling. And I don't know what's going on over there, but they don't look good.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of guys regressed. Maybe it was just because of the scheme and the play calling, but Coleman the year before, great year. Taylor Gabriel was on an upswing. He disappeared this year. The Coleman-Freeman combination kind of took a step back too. Yeah, I just feel like the whole offense kind of took a step back. But still, even with all that, Julio, had his hands on that ball.
Yeah.
And even if he did catch it, he did have, I think it was 1 foot out of bounds when he came down. But that's all you can really ask for is a chance with your best playmaker to win the game at the end. They had a chance, but you're right. Without Kyle Shanahan, that offense is just not the same.
Yeah, definitely. And what I like is specific, since Carson Wentz went down, there's been you see a progression in Nick Foles to leading up to just this last game where, he came out very flat. That was the last couple weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, he had a great game against the Giants, and then he was flat for like 2 or 3 games in a row.
And then it's just through the playoffs, he's just been getting, hotter up until, the game yesterday.
He had like 3 touchdowns, 400 yards or something.
And that's what really excites me about football is just that, what you think could happen, and then these guys just get progressively better in these situations when they need to. And, that's definitely, part Nick Foles, part, Doug Peterson's the coach?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and the part of the coach coming in and being able to fix the offense to better suit the play call, the
quarterback,
the guy in your center.
Guy under center.
All right. Shut up.
No, but you do have a good point though. Like, I feel like he is getting more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. Like, he was slinging the shit out of that thing yesterday, and that was against the Vikings defense, which was statistically the number one defense this year. And he threw 2 bomb touchdowns, a 3rd touchdown, completed a ton of passes, do you have the box score? He must have had like 300 something yards thrown.
Oh, you're talking about yesterday.
Yesterday's.
No, he was well above 300,
yeah,
I think.
Right.
He was just smart with the football, where he was taking those shots, but he wasn't taking unnecessary risks. He was doing a good job of throwing the ball away. And that's why you have a guy like Nick Foles, where there's an argument to be made for the developmental backup quarterback, where, you know, like, you can trade him away, you can get some value back, you spend a sixth round pick, maybe you get back a fourth, and in terms of just like slinging picks around, it works out. But at the same time, there's a lot of value to having a veteran backup who's proven that he can win in certain situations, like Nick Foles, where, like, no, he's not the most talented quarterback in the NFL. You're never going to trade him for a first round pick or anything like that. But at the same time, he's going to come in and have the ability to win you games if he's in the right situation.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, so I got the box score pulled up. So he had 26 completions of 33 attempts, 352 yards, and 3 touchdowns in that game.
Wow.
Sounds like what Carson solid. Wentz was doing.
Like 4 of those incompletions were throwaways too. That's the astounding part of it. He was just on fire, and it wasn't like he wasn't getting a pass rush on him. Like, there were times when he had all the time in the world, but no one was open. So he was moving around in the pocket. He was finding ways to extend the play. He just had a hell of a game. It was really good.
Yeah. And then, okay, so his top 2 receivers, remember who was the best 2 under Carson Wentz. You got Zach Ertz, the tight end, 8 receptions, 93 yards. And then Alshon Jeffrey finally came back after Wentz went down. 5 receptions, 85 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Yeah. So, you know,
the
team kind of shifted and has come back to
what
the production
were.
That they were doing before, which, I mean, if Carson Wentz never went down, and we're talking about the true number one Eagles in the NFC, they would never have been dogs, and this would have just been the
expected.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then Nick Foles comes in, and in season he was playing like shit. So everyone then expected them to just implode.
Yep.
And Doug Peterson was able to shift everything and bring them back to the production they were doing before. So,
And Sean has a good point too. There are a ton of teams, most teams in the NFL that if they had a similar situation, 13-3 season or whatever they were, 10-3, something when Wentz went down, when your number one goes down, that's it, you're done. But having a great backup like that, their season wasn't over. They were able to adjust and keep it moving. So that's, I give them props for that.
And you would think that that's, super rare, which it is. But this year we've had 2 teams do that, the Vikings being the other one, that have gone through 2 starters, technically. Teddy Bridgewater, he was the original franchise quarterback and did make, I think he had 2 snaps or something.
Originally, though. Right. So Keenum is still the backup.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, the Vikings over the last 2 years have had 3 different starting quarterbacks. And it's just amazing what they've done as well. So it's been an exceptional year as far as
the backups
coming through. And even, the Texans originally with Deshaun Watson year,
yep,
until he went down. Yep. For the fact that this year has been such shit as far as trying to figure out what's going on in the league, there's been a lot of exceptional cases that make watching football just so much fun and so awesome.
Yeah, it's my dad would say, it's the ultimate reality TV show.
Yeah,
because you seriously never know what's going to happen, and that's why they play the game. You know, people were shoveling dirt on the Eagles against the Falcons. The same thing against the Vikings. It's not over till it's over.
Exactly. So I'm trying to think here. So do we want to move on to the next game or?
Sure.
All right. So Titans 14 at the Pats, who scored 35.
Yeah, this wasn't really surprising. Titans did play well for the first quarter and change, but then the Patriots did what the Patriots do. Defensively for the Patriots, it was Eric Rowe with 4 solo tackles and 1 assist for 5 total. Titans, it was Logan Ryan with 10 solo, 2 assists, half a tackle for loss. We kind of all saw this one coming. Not much to say. The Patriots just did what they do.
Yeah. Tom Brady did not look like Blake Bortles, which surprisingly they end up playing each other
right
later on, which Blake Bortles did during the, we'll talk about that game next, but put up a lot of
huge
points.
Huge numbers that week.
Huge numbers. Right. Which really kind of showed what he thought of what everyone was saying about him being terrible.
But in regards to this game, I thought Mariota might give him problems because if you guys remember back to the Texans-Patriots game, Deshaun Watson, being a quarterback that can throw and run, did give him a lot of headaches. They damn near won that game. But Mariota just, he's been hobbled all year. Their offensive, you know, kind of scheme hasn't been very creative. So it just didn't go how we wanted it to. What would you think about that one, Sean?
I'm just not sure Mariota is as good of a quarterback as people think he is. I think he's a talented quarterback, but I don't know that he's really developed into the player everyone thought he was going to be when he came into the league. I just don't think he's... It's the same thing with Winston, where, like, coming into this year, they had a lot of hype because they showed, like, a little bit of improvement last year, and then they both just took a huge step back. So I'm not sure what to think about the Titans. I want to see... I'm excited to see what they do on offense next year with a new offensive scheme. I think they're bringing in Vrabel.
Yep.
Who's actually a defensive-minded coach, but that shouldn't really matter because they're going to bring in a new offensive coordinator. You know, it's all delegation. I don't think the Titans were that good this year. I think they're going to move away from the quote exotic smash mouth that they've been doing, and I think that this game was also kind of the changing the guard for Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray. So I think DeMarco Murray's probably on his way out and Derrick Henry's probably going to be a workhorse back next year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one thing just looking at the box score here that is very noticeable is just the pass rush that the Patriots put on Mariota. They had 8 sacks in that game.
Yeah.
So Mariota might have been a, you know, better looking quarterback with a better offensive line, which might be something that they take a look at this offseason.
That's true. But also Mariota tends to create some of his own pressure where he's not confident in his reads. He doesn't make a whole lot of reads comparatively to other NFL quarterbacks. So you get a lot of him holding the ball too long or trying to make stuff happen outside the pocket, or extend plays that just end up in sacks.
Right. Yeah,
it was typical Patriots game plan. You know, they kind of shut down Derrick Henry early and forced Mariota to try and beat him and sacked him 8 times and blew them out.
Yeah, that's basically sums it all up there.
Yeah.
So let's move on here. Jags 45 at the Steelers 42.
Yeah, this was the first of the Sunday games last week, which both Sunday games last week were fucking incredible. This one started it. Just back and forth the whole game. Although Jacksonville did start with a pretty hefty lead. I think they're up like 28-7 or something at one point. And they were holding the Steelers down defensively. But then Big Ben made some clutch throws, a couple bombs to AB. And they made it a game. But despite as close as the score says here, it should have been a 10-point win. They got a garbage time score to make it look closer. But the surprise that I got out of this game was twofold. One, that the Jags let up 42 points, especially considering earlier in the year they had played Pittsburgh and picked off Big Ben 5 times and held him to 3 field goals. To let up 42 points or whatever it was, was after that was pretty crazy. But the crazier part was they scored more than 42 points to fucking beat them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the big.
that was like, what the shit? Fournette had a great game. Bortles, I think, only threw one touchdown. The rest was like running, and Telvin Smith had a defensive touchdown. But yeah, their fucking offense did work. It was pretty wild. What'd you guys think of that game?
I think this was like the worst case scenario for the Jaguars, to be totally honest. Winning this game was the worst thing that could happen to the franchise. It sounds like a hot take, but
God, it's super hot.
It's steaming.
Is it?
Let me.
What?
Is it possible that this game bought Bortles another year? And the Jaguars are not going to replace him at quarterback next year.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
It's possible, yeah.
And that is going to be
terrible.
A tragedy.
Yeah.
Like,
we have seen 4 years of Bortles. We know what he's capable of. We know that he's not a good quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't think he... Like, think about this Jaguars defense and Leonard Fournette and just the way they've been able to find talent at receiver from basically nowhere, and think about what that would be with a good quarterback. Like, this would be an all-time dominant team with a dominant quarterback.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's definitely a thought that I had.
And there are a couple guys out there that'll be available next year. Fucking Eli, maybe not so much Eli, but Cousins is out there.
Yeah.
You know, that there are guys that are better than Bortles that would be available. And you're right, Sean. I think that this getting them so close might buy a little loyalty to Bortles where they probably shouldn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, like, more than anything, I want to see Blake Bortles out and Baker Mayfield in.
Oh, that'd be wild.
I want to see Baker Mayfield in a Jaguars uniform running that offense. I'd also accept him in the Browns.
You want to ruin him like that?
No, I feel like Baker Mayfield's the type of guy that is total, like, you see Josh Rosen out there saying he doesn't want to play for the Browns, and all these people are scared away by, like, the culture of the Browns quarterback situation.
That's so dumb.
And I just really think Baker Mayfield's the type of guy that wants to go out there and take a shitty Browns team and be the guy that turns them around.
Yeah.
And I love that attitude.
I mean, first off, coming into the league is a privilege, you know, that not too many people really get a chance at. But then the Browns are right on that cusp. And anyone that's not seeing that, like, maybe they're not Super Bowl bound,
but they've got young talent.
They've got young talent. Basically, their quarterback position is probably of one of the worst positions on their team. But they've got a lot of good guys on defense. They just had like bad luck as far as some of the I'm trying to think here, the fumbles from the running back there.
Crowell,
yeah. You know, where they're winning the game and they're running the ball well, and then, you know, something unfortunate happens, and then that's what causes the loss. You know, good teams get over that, but they're like a good quarterback or basically like a good quarterback away from at least 7-9.
If they played the 0-16 Detroit Lions,
they would have smoked them.
They would beat them by 42.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Browns are really talented. I think they really botched the quarterback situation there, where I didn't think Kaiser was a good quarterback coming in. Granted, they drafted him in the same round that I had him graded in, but my big issue with Kaiser, one of my big issues with Kaiser coming out, was that he just didn't have that like killer instinct mentality. He was kind of always a guy that like he'd get sacked and then he'd get happy feet, or he'd throw an interception and then he'd get conservative. You know, he just had, kind of that mentality that it looked like you just needed to coddle him. And he just had confidence problems. And then to compound that, you have the Browns going and benching him every other week, where you took his major flaw and then made it even worse. Yeah. So I don't know. They botched that by starting him. They botched that by benching him. They just, he should have never been in the situation he was in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's why Hugh Jackson is not the right guy, but that's just me.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I mean, we've talked about their young guys they have there. They certainly have potential. We'll see.
Yeah, for sure.
But back to that Steelers game. All right, so that was obviously not a great situation for Jacksonville that may have cursed them for this next year. Big Ben, as far as I'm concerned, none of this is on him. He went out for 469 and 5 touchdowns and 1 pick or something like that.
Exactly that.
Yeah, I have a weird memory for football.
What's the completions versus attempts?
Oh, I have no fucking idea. I just remember the box score. But
not good enough.
Yeah. But it wasn't on him. And then you're reading stories about how Bell was like showing up late to practice and a pregame walkthroughs and stuff, like, and how he wasn't really engaged. And then you got AB going out there with a busted ass knee, hauling in 2 touchdowns and a whatever, 100 something yards, I think.
132.
100, there you go. With a busted ass gimpy knee, making great plays.
Yeah.
They put the 2Bs did everything they could to win that game. The third one, I didn't feel like was really that into it. Do we think do you guys agree with that? And B, do you think that was because of the contract shit that's going on?
Well, there was definitely the contract stuff came up, which I don't know from what I remember hearing how much it was just an off the cuff comment from Bell that got blown up, him saying basically that he'll retire if he got franchised.
Yeah.
Which, you know, definitely puts a it fucks with the locker room a bit. But I mean, the stats for Bell, he had 2 touchdowns. He had 67 yards on the ground, 88 in the air. I mean, that doesn't really sound like a guy who didn't show up. Makes me wonder if that is him not showing up, what it would have looked like if he did. You know, maybe they would have won this game, but I don't know.
Impossible. It's impossible to tell what happened there. It definitely 100% has to do with the contract situation. Yeah. Which way it goes, though, that's another question, because this could be A, Bell actually doing what everyone's saying, where he just didn't show up because he didn't care because of his contract. But like, realistically, it doesn't sound realistic, because if you're on the verge of A, winning a Super Bowl, you probably want to win a Super Bowl.
Right.
Mm-hmm. B, if you're on the verge of getting paid by another team,
you want to put your all into it.
Yeah, you want to look good.
You want to have the best showing possible. So none of that really makes sense, unless he's an idiot, which is also
a possibility.
Legitimate. Yeah, you never know. Like, yeah. I don't know Le'Veon Bell personally. He could be an idiot, or this could be totally overblown.
Yeah.
The other option is that the Steelers blew this out of proportion because they're using it as leverage in contract situations, where that would be a shitty move on their part, because you're trying to get this guy to agree to sign your team and you're doing them dirty like that. Either way, somebody fucked up. I don't know who it is, but somebody made a massive mistake by letting any of this go public. And that's just where I'm at on it. And I think that it's just dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I did forget the defense. Nate just pointed that out. For the Jags, it was Telvin Smith with 14 solo, 2 assists, 1 pass defense, and 1 fumble return touchdown. Steelers,
he's pretty good at football.
Yeah. That's pretty pretty solid stat line right there. Yeah. Sean Davis led the way for the Steelers. 9 solo, 3 assists, 12 total. And I just wanted real quick to point out that I feel like some of the fucking Steelers were looking past this game, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people were looking past this game.
Yeah,
I mean, this was divisional. What was it? Jags. Who'd the Jags beat in wild card? I mean, I'm looking at the, I got the box scores right here. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here.
Bills.
Oh yeah, the Bills. Okay, that was the game of who could lose the, you know, who could lose it first. So Jags just kind of, you know, had the divisional game dropped into their lap, as some people might have thought, and so the Steelers should have, you know, we thought that the Steelers were gonna just pound right through them on their way to New England.
Yeah.
So
everyone was looking forward to the New England game. I feel like, or a lot of people were, and that you know, you got it. Belichick, he may be boring, he may be dry, but he's right when he says we're on to whatever team, you know,
right?
And they're just focusing on that team, and that's it.
Yeah, that's get you in sticky situations that way. As you can see, the Steelers, Steelers should have definitely won that, especially scoring 42 points on
right.
on the Jags. That, Steelers D really kind of screwed the pooch
for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, they didn't get much pressure either. Like I don't see any sacks here, on Bortles, which, you know, should happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, Saxonville was getting pressure on Roethlisberger, so they got two sacks.
It's amazing how far a pass rush can take a team, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it makes everything easier because your defense makes your offense easier, and everything on defense hinges on that pass rush.
Yep, absolutely. Can make a terrible secondary look great. But in this case, they had the pass rush and a great secondary. So best of both worlds.
Yeah. I mean, how many times has the best defense in the league, won the Super Bowl? That happens, you know,
often. Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Alrighty, so one more divisional game. Yep.
Yeah,
so
we got the Saints 24 at the Vikings 29 with a amazing finish.
Yeah.
Take it away, John.
So this was the walk-off touchdown for Diggs, yeah. Which everyone should know about because it's been everywhere. It was pretty crazy. Defensively for the Vikings, it was Eric Kendricks, 7 solo, 3 assists for 10 total. And for the Saints, it was Manti Te'o and his imaginary girlfriend with 6 solo, 4 assists, 1 sack, half a tackle for loss. This was just a great game. Vikings started quick, had a pretty good lead. In fact, you texted me in like the first quarter and were like, done deal, man. It's over. What happened to the Saints? And I was like, hold your horses there, champ. And
Drew Brees.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> And they should have won that game. They did what they had to do. They got the field goal to go ahead. Not much time on the clock. Vikings are forced into a desperate situation, but crazy shit happens sometimes, and that's what we saw. What'd you guys take out of that?
I want to go on a quick rant here. So that last play of the game, right? Mm-hmm. The amazing, miraculous, somehow touchdown, right? Bunch of people were taking to Twitter trying to figure out what the fuck Marcus Williams, the safety, was doing. Bunch of people saying that guy needs to retire, that guy should lose his job, that was a fucking terrible play, all that. Like, I just want to shed some light on what happened there because it seems like a lot of people just don't get it. He did not miss the tackle. He did not blow the coverage. What happened was he was running to make the tackle or to make the hit on Stephon Diggs as soon as he got contact. And he was going to get there early. So he knew that if he hit him, he was going to get a pass interference. And even if he slowed down on time, he was going to hit a defenseless receiver because he was going to be hitting him in the air right at the knee area. So while he's running full speed, he tried to avoid Stephon Diggs and dive out of the way. And that's why he had his head down. And that's why he was contorting his body to not hit him. And that's how that whole thing happened. He just got there a split second early. That's it.
And it took out the corner that was chasing him too.
Yeah.
So I mean, realistically, he made the right move. Like you don't want to hit the guy and give him a free field goal.
Right.
Like sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in that case, even if there's no time on the clock, they would have had an untimed down and a field goal. So you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is you want to force Keenum to make that completion or make that throw and force Diggs to make that catch. And that's what he did. He just got there a split second early, and that's how everything happened. And everybody who's blaming him for that loss needs to realize that they gave up how many points to fucking Case Keenum?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's definitely true. I mean,
he got crucified for that. And it's, and you can never, I mean, sure, people make mistakes, shit happens, but you can never really put an entire game on one guy.
Oh, no.
They, Cameron Jordan was saying, they shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, as far as, yeah, the trying not to get the penalty was probably
smart.
A smart move.
Yeah.
But at the same token, he took out the only other guy that could have gotten there, and they could have at least had a chance against a field goal, whereas they just let Diggs walk into the end zone. So had he hit him and gotten the penalty, and the time would have ran down, it would have been a field goal, and now it's all on Forbath's leg. And, you know, yeah, I would probably take that chance.
You're looking in retrospect.
Well, where, like, understandable.
You're looking at it knowing that Keenum's going to make that throw. Diggs is going to make that catch. He's going to accidentally hit his own guy and nobody else is going to make the tackle. And also Diggs is going to be able to stay in bounds. Like, that was a lot of things that had to go wrong in order for it to play out the way it did.
Oh, and yeah, I'm totally looking at it in retrospect. Though Keenum to Diggs was probably either Diggs or Thielen is the way Keenum has been playing. I would have said that, you know, that's a good, he's got a good shot of making that.
Making that throw probably.
Yeah.
But that was not an easy catch and he almost stepped out of bounds and there should have been somebody else back there.
He almost fell down too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was, right. I mean, it was a perfect storm for that, which makes exciting football. You know, that was probably one of the most exciting plays of the season.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know? Of the season. Yeah.
My dad is not really even a football fan. And we're having dinner, you know, families meeting together. We just got the game on in the back. And, you know, his idea of, you know, the Lions quarterback is Matthew Stratford. I have to remind him every time I'm around him that that's not the right name. So he doesn't watch football much. And he saw that and, like, just went wild. Just the excitement from that play for someone who doesn't really watch football, you know, it really shows how much, how great of a play that was and how exciting, you know, that end of the game was. So,
yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. So, you can find us on Twitter. We are at IDP guys. If you want to chat with us, tell us how bad our takes are, whatever, or individually, I'm at Nate Cheat. Sean is at Lanny 1925 and John here is at Orange Man 3142. Also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and please leave us a 5-star review so other people can find us and enjoy our content. But so let's shift about a week and talk about the conference games that just happened. We got the Jags 20 at the Patriots 24.
Yep. I mean, in my heart of hearts, I knew that this would probably happen, which is why I made a substantial bet on the Patriots weeks ago for Super Bowl futures.
If you've been listening to the show and the Johnny the Greek segment.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a solid bet that they'll win like every year, which is kind of fucking crazy, but that's the world we live in. Jags did a good job, though. They played well. All in all, they held New England to 24 points. Yeah. Having scored 45 the week before, you would think it's not outside the realm of possibility for them to score 25 points and win this thing. But it was just, it came down to how it always did. Brady was down 10 going into the fourth quarter and did what he does and made it happen, and they won the game. Not a lot to say. It happens. It'll probably be the same shit next week or in 2 weeks.
Look at that game. If the Jaguars had a competent quarterback.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, because just look at look at how much they were destroying the Patriots in the first half when Bortles was playing well.
Yeah.
Like, if you can just get a competent quarterback where, like, that second half, Bortles just, like, pissed it away.
Yeah, he disappeared.
It was just hard to watch.
Mm-hmm.
If they had a better quarterback, that team would be something else.
Yeah.
That's true.
Defense played their brains out. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen the Patriots have that many three and outs this entire year.
And you know what? I think what really affected the end of the game was Miles Jack going out.
And Marcell Dareus, too.
Yeah.
Because that run that sealed the game for the Patriots,
mm-hmm.
Marcell Dareus has been stopping runs like that all year. And he disappears, and all of a sudden they can run and get the first down and kneel for the rest of the game.
Right.
Him and Miles Jack going out, when that happened, I was like, shit, like this is not good.
That's the end.
Yeah.
But I got to say, Tom Brady down 10 points with, less than a quarter to go is kind of the reverse purgatory that
Philip Rivers
usually has.
Yeah.
Where, Rivers ends up not making it, and Brady
always gets it.
Always gets it. Yep. And puts us in purgatory because he won.
Yeah. But, it was a competitive game. It was a good game. Jacksonville did well, just not good enough. What'd you guys take out of that? Oh shit. I forgot defense. Hold on 2 seconds. Jacksonville was Telvin Smith, 8 solo, 2 pass defense. New England, unfortunately for Sean, was Kyle Van Noy, 5 solo, 4 assists, 1 sack, 2 tackles for loss, 1 pass defense. He actually had a pretty good game, but all right, continue.
So my take on the game was, I mean, even when the Patriots were down, I was definitely, watching the score. I was in the middle of a flight coming back from Detroit, so I didn't get to watch a lot of it. I listened to the last bit driving back from Boston, but there was always a thought in the back of my mind that the Patriots are going to pull it out somehow, even though, the Jags were looking pretty good to begin. But I was conflicted because I kind of wanted I didn't want Blake Bortles to win this game is, I guess, where I was at, because then, he would be going to the Super Bowl, and for the next year, I'd be hearing how Blake Bortles is a better quarterback than Matthew Stafford because he's got, 3 playoff wins and went to the Super Bowl.
That's why I wanted him to go to the Super Bowl, though, because, Blake Bortles is the answer to everything. He's the answer to all of the problems that we've had with quarterback discussions, where if Blake Bortles wins a Super Bowl, nobody is allowed to use Super Bowls as a discussion of greatness.
But wait, don't you just go back and Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl?
Yeah, but Dilfer was a long time, not good, but competent.
Yeah, and they had a good run game and the greatest defense since the 85 Bears. So
yeah, but that's true of Jacksonville too. But the thing is right now Dilfer and Flacco are the ones that are used as the examples. But
right.
Dilfer had a nice long career. Flacco is obviously still going. He's definitely not elite, but
Blake
but
Bortles
he's still
could
going.
Have won a Super Bowl and then got cut.
Yeah,
basically.
Absolutely. And that would have been the solution to everything, where anytime anyone's like, how many Super Bowl rings do they have? It's like, well, Blake Bortles, done. Conversation over. And also I've been pushing the is Blake Bortles elite hashtag on Twitter for a few weeks
into,
now.
I got into it with you on the flight back. Just it's bad. But now
I probably lost 30 followers on Twitter just from that.
Oh man.
That's their fault. Their mistake.
I probably would have followed you too.
Missing all the scorching hot Blake Bortles days. Somebody followed me yesterday. I was just tweeting out to everything, just responding hashtag Blake Bortles elite. And someone followed me named Bortles Mania.
Oh my God.
It's like, I love that these are people now.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I still remember Sabatino, 2 years ago, drafted Blake Bortles super high in fantasy. And he was like, oh, this guy, it's going to be so great.
He's the future, right?
He's the future in Jacksonville, because he had a semi decent rookie season. And No, it was hot, hot garbage.
Didn't work out.
No.
Very bad. So, but yeah, no, I guess I'm on the other side of the fence. I just didn't want to see a shitty quarterback get a decent, you know, run in the playoffs. And
so you're a Brady fan is what you're saying. Cause I mean, look who was left at the time.
I'm not a Brady fan, but you got to at least like have to Brady respect fan. The fact that
the Brady system has produced so many.
Exactly. Belichick's system is produced.
Right. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Brady's a system quarterback. He fits that system. He does well in that system. And Christ. Put him in Arizona and he would not do well. Well, maybe not Arizona, but you know what I'm saying? Like, Brady gets traded to the Browns. The Browns aren't going to the Super Bowl.
Brady gets traded to the Browns. It's going to be a Browns Patriots AFC championship. Yeah.
I'd pay to see that.
I would too.
Yeah. How long until it's a Lions Patriots Super Bowl, Patricia versus Belichick?
I don't think that's ever dreaming? Gonna happen. So I think by the time the Lions make it, Belichick will be dead.
Yeah. Or retired.
Dead.
Yeah. Or retired. And you know what, if as soon as he leaves, that's it, man. It's fucking it's over with in New England, especially with Jimmy G gone now. The future is bleak.
I still think that if Belichick left and Brady stayed, that the Patriots would be a really good team.
Oh,
because
sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Brady's fully capable of running that offense on his own.
Yeah, he could definitely keep that system going.
But the way they had things set up though last year is it would have been sustainable for the next 10, 15 years. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, if they didn't get rid of Garoppolo,
right? If they just switched, right,
they had to get rid of Garoppolo.
Yeah, they had to.
Unless Brady retires this year,
right?
Keeping Garoppolo would have been just
financially stupid.
Yeah, it would not have been a financially viable option.
That's good for everyone else, though, that's not a Patriots fan. That means that hopefully the end is in sight at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're gonna draft someone this year, and they're going to be awesome.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
Who's sucking Belichick's dick now? gargle. All right, so let's move on to the last game here. Vikings, a whole whopping 7 versus the Eagles, 38.
Yeah, game started quick for the Vikings. They had that quick TD there, and they were looking good, but then they just got blown out. I mean, not a lot to say. They couldn't score, and their number one defense let up 38 points. It was not pretty. Foles looked great. Mm-hmm. He's certainly improved over the last few weeks. Enough to beat the Patriots? I doubt it, but you never know.
It could happen.
Could happen. I mean, it's been a weird year. Who knows? But defensively, real quick, for Philly, it was Michael Kendricks, 6 solo, 2 assists. For the Vikings, it was Anthony Harris, 6 solo, 1 assist. Wasn't a very exciting game, but what'd you guys see?
I enjoyed it. I was at a bar for this one.
Nice.
So I got to see all the Vikings fans in distress there. That was nice. I don't know. This one really surprised me. A lot of these games have surprised me, but I just didn't expect the Vikings to come out so flat. Just because Shermer's done such a good job with the Vikings offense this year, and their defense, there's really never a situation where the defense doesn't show up to play. So, like, they have their off games, but they show up at least. And it just seems like nobody showed up this week. And that's very uncharacteristic given how good their coaching staff is and given the kind of like the attitude that the Vikings have, where like a lot of them are just kind of jackasses. They like they're douchebag players on the field. But that also comes with the benefit of being like high effort, intense players. You know, it's like perfect where like he's a fucking dickwad, but also he's really good because of it, because he cares and because he's got that swag, that attitude, you know?
Right.
So I didn't expect the Vikings to just not show up. It's just not really their MO. And it just kind of seems like they didn't show up.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation. And it's strange, too, because it's like they got a second chance the week before. You know what I mean? Like, you'd think that they would have embraced that and been like, we're still alive. Let's do this thing.
I wonder if they were doing the same thing the Steelers did, looking past the Eagles because of Nick Foles.
It's possible.
And the fact that the Eagles didn't play the greatest the week before. Even, I mean, they beat the Falcons, but
they only scored 15 points,
they only scored 15 points, so... they might have been looking past. The one question I've got here, Sean, for you is where does Case Keenum lie after this? Do they go back to Sam Bradford? Do they franchise tag Keenum and keep him a starter? Do they cut him? Do they
what happens?
Sign him?
Yeah,
and make him, you know, their future?
I don't know if you remember me talking about the Teddy Bridgewater situation earlier in the year, where I was explaining why they were not going to take him off IR. And it was because they were going to get another year of his contract.
Except that didn't happen.
Except they took him off IR and then they didn't use him. And now they don't have that extra year of his contract, where this would have been a perfect scenario to either A, get an extended look at Bridgewater and see how he's progressing, or B, trade Bridgewater rather than just having to let him go. Because I honestly don't believe that you're going to be able to sign Case Keenum for anything other than starting QB money. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to sign Bridgewater for anything other than starting QB money. You're not going to be able to sign Bradford for anything other than starting QB money.
Yeah.
So you're really just going to get one of them. And I think it's going to be hard to talk the fans out of Keenum, given how well the Vikings did this year.
Yeah, you know, and even Keenum's story, like during the summer, watched All or Nothing, last year's Hard Knocks. You know, he's got this touching story that I'm sure everyone in Minnesota is latched onto and likes. So it's going to be a tough situation for them.
People are still rooting for Bridgewater too. Sam Bradford's for sure gone. There's no way Bradford's back. Cause they're just not going to pay him what he wants given his injury concerns. You don't want an injury prone quarterback, and you certainly don't want an injury prone backup, because that's your last line of defense basically.
Right.
So I got to believe Bradford's going to be elsewhere. Which means that you have Bridgewater or Keenum. And
so do you think Bradford goes and starts somewhere, or goes and backs up somewhere?
I could see Bradford starting somewhere.
Yeah, I could see that too.
He's still talented. His career's just been derailed.
Yeah.
And I think that somebody will take him and draft a rookie QB, you know, where they'll take Bradford with the expectation that he's going to get hurt at some point, and you just kind of are using him as the stopgap for your while you're developing your rookie QB. At least that's what I would do if I was signing Bradford, because he's, to me, not a long-term solution, not a reliable solution, but he's a talented player that can win you games when he's healthy. So that's, if I were a GM, that's what I'd be doing with Bradford. It's possible that Keenum ends up going with Shermer, wherever Shermer is going. He just got a head coaching job. I'm trying to remember
Giants?
I think he did.
Yeah, I think it's the Giants.
Then I could see that. That would make sense, because I'm not sure if the Giants will take a QB at 4, but it's possible they take Keenum over with Shermer, and then they use the number 4 on someone like Saquon Barkley. That's a very legitimate possibility.
I think that'd be great for them. That'd be interesting.
I mean, if Keenum can do what he did this year with that offense, imagine what he could do with Odell. Like, and I'm definitely not knocking Diggs or Thielen. I think they're both top flight receivers, but they're not Odell Beckham.
Right, and Dalvin Cook went down early in the season for them too, so that hurt also.
Yeah, so he had Shermer's ability to get something out of that running game was just astounding to me this year.
Yeah,
if Keenum could do this in that system with these guys, I'd love to see what he could do with Odell Beckham, Saquon Barkley, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, Brandon Marshall.
You're assuming that Eli Manning goes somewhere else.
I would think so. Once they snapped his streak, that was it, I think.
Yeah, that was pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
That was the end of that. I don't know. I don't really believe in playing for records or anything like that. I just think it was a dumb decision in general because, like, what were they doing? They weren't getting a look at a young quarterback. You know, they were looking at, was it Geno Smith?
Geno Smith, right.
Yeah, I was like, you know what you have in Geno Smith. Mm-hmm. What do you mean you're looking at your other options? Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They had Davis Webb that they could have taken a look at. That would have actually made sense. Mm-hmm. But no, they looked at Geno Smith, who was not going to be, like, he's not the quarterback of the future, and they know that. It was just a dumb move. It was a fucking Ben McAdoo move.
Yep.
Yep, that it is. We got anything else we want to cover on this game?
Yeah, not really.
All right.
So let's preview the Super Bowl.
Yeah, let's talk. We got the Pats versus the Eagles in Minnesota.
Right. The line is currently Patriots -5.5. I think they win in cover.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
I mean, I'm just going off of my gut from the entire year is Pats win.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I could see a path for the Eagles. As far as, you know, up until this point, they've been dealing with pretty stout defenses, and the Pats have a good defense, and they've had to kind of reshape it and kind of use the discarded players from around the league to patch it up to make it, you know, effective to get to where they are now. But I wouldn't call them, you know, the Vikings defense or even the Falcons defense for that matter. So I could see the Eagles, if Foles is playing like he did yesterday, last night, being able to put up points on the Pats, and the Eagles do have a good defense, so
right, it's possible.
It's possible. There's a chance. Yeah. It's not home run I would have figured.
No, I can definitely see it happening. I don't really want the Eagles to win, though. Like, I don't know. I might actually be a Patriots fan now. For this week, bite me. But I really like Carson Wentz. I don't want the Carson Wentz Nick Foles debate. Like, I don't ever root for players to fail. So I'm not going to root for Nick Foles to fail. But at the same time, I'm a big Carson Wentz fan. I've been a big fan of him since college, and I don't want all of the talk of Carson Wentz being good from earlier in this year to just become, oh, well, he was just good because of the system. Look what Nick Foles did, you know?
Yep.
And that's inevitably going to happen if the Eagles win the Super Bowl.
Even if they don't, I mean,
yeah, I think it's kind of
it's already happening. I guarantee you if Wentz has a fucked up game or two in the first month next year, we're going to be talking about this.
Yeah.
It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is pretty stupid.
I don't want the Pats to win.
I don't want them to get six to tie with the Steelers, and I don't want Brady to get six either, because then, oh my God, like,
I mean, you live in Vikings territory, so you would know how it would feel if the Vikings would have won. Just dealing with,
and then add four more Super Bowls on top of the one that they just won. There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't blame you guys for the Patriots. I don't like the Patriots at all. I want Hoyer to get another Super Bowl ring.
Right. This is not an ideal Super Bowl. Yeah. I mean, I'm a Cowboy fan, so I shouldn't want the Eagles to win either. Right. But I'll be rooting for the. I don't care. I win money or the Patriots lose.
Right.
I'm happy.
You know, I like the Eagles as far as, like, you know, two ships passing in the night. You know, it's cool. Whatever. They don't have any effect on me if they win. So, and I really don't, you know, Carson Wentz, Nick Foles. I think Carson Wentz is the better overall quarterback because he's far more mobile, far better at going through his progressions and everything. I think that they've just had to rejigger the the offense so that Nick Foles could be successful as well. So I feel like Nick Foles could kind of finish the season for Carson Wentz, and then Wentz comes back and we're looking at a good team again. I mean, they're a good team now, but a whole team for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think though, Sean? Who do you think wins? Like, straight out.
I never bet against the Patriots.
Yep.
Ever.
Yeah, right.
Patriots every time.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean that they will win, but odds are always in their favor.
Yep. That's I think that's where we tend to be. Yep.
That's something I want to bring up real quick about the Pats Jags game. How in the fuck do the Patriots not get a penalty on offense or defense?
Yeah,
like, I'm not gonna. No,
that was it was a special teams
penalty.
Right. One for 10 yards the whole game. That's all they have.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say that there's a conspiracy. I hate the conspiracy theories. I'm not going to say that the refs were trying to hand them the game or anything like that. I just think that that is super fucking lucky because, like, there are penalties on every play. So when you see that much of a discrepancy,
there's something
in
wrong.
Penalties.
Yeah.
Like, that's bad reffing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there were some obvious defensive holds and pass interference calls that were not called. You know.
Well, what about the
glaringly obvious ones?
The ref that celebrated with the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean that's yeah, whatever.
That picture was taken out of context. I saw the GIF of it.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know whether he was trying to break him up or what exactly he was trying to do. But then one of the players said something to him and he laughed and they just took the screenshot of his laugh.
Right.
Yeah, okay. The congratulatory pat on the back from the ref to Brady was the more egregious one, I think.
Yeah, definitely. No, I feel you though. That didn't make any sense. And actually, at the wing place I was at, I went outside for a cigarette, and this fucking Patriots fan, bearded douche with his fucking e-cig, is like they're not calling enough penalties for the Patriots. He said that at halftime, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me right now? It was like
Jesus.
It was like 5 for 62 on Jacksonville at halftime, and 1 for 10 on the Patriots, and that's how it ended for the Patriots. I was like. Like, Pats fans
and then
legit
not penalized for the rest
right,
of the game.
Exactly. Like, they legit expect the refs to bail them out.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's expected that the league will probably be looking at this game as far as the officiating because from the Detroit Lions podcast when they had Dean Blandino on, they said that basically there's like a par that of penalties that is average. And any game that goes above or below, you know, they look through it. So,
right.
You know, just as trying to figure out what, you know, why or what's going on. And, you know, someone might get let go.
They pay attention to people's tendencies to certain teams, too, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it's very odd, but I don't think it'll go unnoticed by the league at all.
Yeah.
So.
Too late anyway.
Right, it's over, yep. You know. So
we'll never get to see that Bortles Super Bowl.
Yeah,
the Bortles Foles Super Bowl. God,
fire.
Johnny the Greek.
Yeah, this will be quick and sweet. The last bet I gave you guys was New Orleans +4.5 against the Vikings, which was looking great until the final 2 seconds of the game.
Yeah.
And I guess the line changed, so it was 5.5 later in the week. So if you got in on it later in the week, you won. If you bet when I told you to, you lost. So, sorry. This week, New England -5.5 in Philly. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. This has been the strangest season I've seen in a long time. A lot of shit has been weird, especially with point spreads. Just don't touch it unless you've done what I told you to do weeks ago, which was make a futures bet. Don't touch it. Because even if you bet the Patriots, the money line bet is horrible. Mm. You'd have to bet like $100 to get like 40 back or something. It's fucking terrible. And the spread is kind of iffy. I just wouldn't touch it. If you want to make a bet on the Super Bowl, bet like heads or tails or some shit.
Yeah,
that's my advice.
The length of the national anthem.
There you go. You know. Something like that. You get a better chance with that shit.
Yeah. Alrighty. So we are going to take a break because it's Pro Bowl on Sunday and no one gives a shit about that. And we don't either. So,
correct.
We're just, there's, you know, we've covered everything up to the Super Bowl now. So we're going to take a little break on that. And we'll be back after the Super Bowl to finish up coverage of the 2017 season. So
and then we'll preview kind of what's coming up in the future.
Yeah, we've got a lot of pretty cool things that we're getting together for the off season. So definitely stick with us, bringing in some experts to talk about, you know, teams, IDP, draft, fantasy football overall, all that kind of stuff. We got a lot to, we're working on a lot of things. So but with that, I mean, the episode's over. How are you guys? I'm still sober, so I got nothing ridiculous to say. All right. See you guys.